Hey, brothers, this is Didact, and we are finally back with another Didactic Mind episode. This one is Didactic Mind episode 117, 117, that's right, 117 as in Master Chief, Sierra 117, and this one is The Burning of Rome. A very warm welcome, as always, to all of my longtime readers, very warm welcome to all of my Podbean subscribers. My apologies for the long delay in getting out another podcast. I've been very, very busy and very, very lazy at the same time with respect to podcasting for quite some time. I've just been very busy with work for the last 2 months, 3 months almost, actually, and not much to say, really. I mean, what more can you say given the extraordinarily crazy times we live in? Nonetheless, I think it is high time we did another podcast, particularly given it is around about, you know, Easter time, and that tends to be an important time of the year for me, certainly. I do plan on doing an Easter podcast, as usual, and in light of certain recent speeches and interesting things that came out from various people, I think it is worth taking a moment to look at what's happening around the world and do some analysis. Before I get started, as always, be sure to like, comment, share, and subscribe. For those of you who are interested or you'd like to support my work, you like what you hear, there's a Buy Me a Coffee link somewhere in the description box, or in the, if you're looking at it from the website, somewhere down, lower down the page, below the actual podcast itself, embedded. The embedded podcast player thing, you'll find a link to a Buy Me a Coffee page. It's not obligatory. It's just if you feel like pitching in and contributing to the upkeep, maintenance of the site, and or my, you know, general scotch fund, if you will, coffee liqueur fund, as it were, please feel free. Again, not obligatory at all. I'm extremely grateful for all listener and reader support. Really appreciate it very much, and would be delighted if you did, but again, not obligatory. And thank you again for your patronage, as always. So, basically, today I wanted to talk about some of the recent things we heard from, really, the State of Disunion address from fake President Brandon, and contrast and compare it with what we're seeing coming out of Russia, out of the Banderistan war, and from President Putin, where the contrast between the various Western leaders and President Putin could not be greater. And it's important to understand this, particularly this weekend. So keep in mind, voting for the presidential elections in Russia started on Friday the 15th, i.e., well, as of this recording, it was yesterday. Now, why does this matter? Why is it important? Because despite all of the, you know, nonsense coming out of the West about how Russia is an undemocratic, autocratic, tyrannical system ruled over as a very repressive and very evil kind of one-party dictatorship by one man who has complete and total control over every aspect of life in the country, the people who say this really don't know anything about Russia. They've never been there. They don't understand anything about its history. They don't speak the language. They don't know the people. And as such, they are completely and totally clueless about the nature of the system. The reality is Russia is simply too big for any one man to have complete and total control over. It's not possible. I have traveled throughout some of Western and Southern Russia. So I know what it's like when you go down to a place like Dagestan, which is, for all intents and purposes, an independent federal republic of Russia. It has its own government, it has its own leader, like president almost, who has sovereign authority over the people of Dagestan because they vote for him. But at the same time, that same, you know, leader of Dagestan submits to the authority of the overall president of the Russian Federation. And it's the same story no matter where you go. If you go to Primorsky Krai or Krasnodarsky Krai or Belgorod region or Kursk region or Voronezh region, Воронежская область, Тульская область, Пермская область, Ленинградская область. It's all the same thing. They all have their own regional governors who are elected by the people or are appointed by the Kremlin, depending on the structure that you have in a particular place. There's even a Jewish autonomous region. I mean, the Jews are free to live there and free to choose whoever they want. The same with Tuva, and the same with Buryat and Buryatia and Yakutia, and you know, it's the same across the whole of Russia. The regional governors have actually tremendous power, and for those who say that the Russian electoral process is corrupt and fraudulent, well, I don't know how you can take that seriously when you look at what's happening in the United States, when you look at what actually happened in 2020, and you understand how corrupt the process is. It's not a matter of debate anymore that the 2020 election in the United States was completely corrupted. This is not up for discussion. We know it was corrupted. The numbers are absolutely clear on this subject. We know that the democratic process was completely subverted by mail-in ballots, by absentee balloting, and by a complete lack of actual transparency in the electoral process. You cannot make the argument that the Russians are somehow uniquely corrupt or that they have a uniquely terrible electoral system, especially given I'm speaking to you as someone who was there in 2020 when they held a constitutional referendum. I was there in person when they did that, and the Russian people voted on constitutional amendments that cemented the idea of marriage being between one man and one woman, that cemented the idea of a man as the head of the family, that codified in law the idea that high officials of the Russian government must be Russian and must not hold dual citizenship and must never have held dual citizenship at any time in like 25 years, that the president of the Russian Federation must be Russian, the vice president must be Russian, the prime minister must be Russian, and so on and so forth, so that every senior level official in Russia must by law be Russian. This is not a corrupt country in the sense of a place that brings in foreigners and allows foreigners to become quote-unquote Russian and then rule over other Russians. This is not a country that has succumbed to the idiocy and the stupidity of the Hart-Keller Immigration Act of 1965 in the United States. And when you look at Russia and you understand how Russian politics works, which is not easy to do, it's a very opaque system to a Western-trained mind, although to a Russian-trained mind, it makes pretty much complete sense. When you look at how Russian politics works, you begin to understand how important the life of the state is to the average citizen's life. And you begin to understand how Russians see themselves. And it's very important to realize that Russia has seen itself historically as the Third Rome. Now, why does this matter? And especially given what I called this podcast, the Burning of Rome. Because when you look at the rise and the fall of the Roman Empire, what do you see? You see the consolidation of state power in the hands of a very small number of elites in the Roman Republic, which led to mass unrest and dissatisfaction among the ordinary people, which led to the rise of first the Gracchus brothers, then Sulla, then Caesar, and finally the destruction of the Republic and the transition into the Empire. And then as the Empire grew and grew and grew, into the division of that Empire into roughly four quadrants, if you will. And with the eventual collapse of Rome, you saw the crisis of the third century. resulting in, like in one case, I think it was 6 emperors in the space of a year, rebellions, uprisings, military collapses, hyperinflation, price controls, the mass importation of barbarians, and that continued on into the 4th century. And then finally, towards the end of the 5th century, the usurpation of Rome as an entity by a barbarian who actually used to be a Roman general, who took the throne from another Roman who was actually originally probably from barbarian stock himself. So America has always built itself or compared itself with the Roman Republic. This is not news. I mean, the Constitution of the United States and the founding, you know, is built on very Roman principles. The founding fathers looked at Rome, looked at Republican Rome as the model of the government system they wanted to create, and with very good reason. They distrusted democracy, as the Romans did, the early Romans did. They distrusted oligarchy to an extent, but they themselves were to a degree oligarchs as well. They distrusted the idea of putting ultimate power in the hands of one man, monarchy, but they liked the idea of essentially preserving the God-given rights of free-born English citizens. And they believed that the state was the guarantor of those rights, but ultimately the guarantee of freedom and of those rights came from the people themselves. The state only existed to make sure those rights were not usurped by other actors. And the people had to take charge of themselves to make sure the government itself did not usurp those rights. If you look at that evolution of political and philosophical thought from the Roman Republic to the Roman Empire to basically Enlightenment-era England, you'll find a considerable continuity of thought and ideals influenced very heavily by Christian morality, and with good reason. But ultimately, it came down to a very Roman idea of government being transplanted into a new continent, into the United States. And the United States always saw itself as this bastion of liberty, of the rights of freeborn Englishmen. However, it was not the only country that modeled itself on Rome. Russia has always done so to some extent, and to a large extent consciously, actually. Because when the Eastern Roman Empire broke away from the Western one, it took the Eastern Church with it. And the Eastern and Western churches evolved along very different lines. I mean, the Eastern Church to this day, the Greek Orthodox Church, still uses the old Greek rites and has arguably a much, well, not even arguably, as far as I'm concerned, it does have a much, much stronger claim to being the original church descended from the disciples of Jesus, much stronger than the Catholic Church does. The Catholic Church bases its claims on being the one true Catholic Church, you know, small c, Catholic Church, based on, as far as I'm concerned, a misreading of Scripture. I mean, all of it comes down to confusing Petros with Petra. It's like, it's that bad in Scripture. To me, that is just remarkably silly that they would do that. But, you know, anyway, I'm not here to spark an argument over which overly ceremonial and overly ritualistic liturgical church is the right church. As far as I'm concerned, I don't follow either of them. I follow the Bible. So I don't care what the Orthodox churches or the Catholic Church claim to be the one true church. Let them argue about that. But the point is, the Eastern Orthodox churches, ultimately answering to Byzantium, considered themselves to be a distinct religious entity and the guardians of true Christendom. And that carried on all the way from the fall of the Western Roman Empire through to the fall of the Eastern Roman Empire, the fall of Byzantium in, what was it, 1453, I believe. The siege and fall of Constantinople, when the Ottomans took it over and the entire eastern flank of Christendom basically collapsed. Now, when President Putin sat down to give that long lecture on history to Bass Tucker in that superb interview that they did, Tucker was on the receiving end of a 30-minute long lecture in history, and he said afterwards he got quite annoyed, and he tried to interrupt President Putin several times, kept his temper pretty well, I thought. He got really annoyed, is what Tucker said afterwards, and he tried to stop him from filibustering. But then Tucker, on reflection, looking back, realized he wasn't filibustering. President Putin was giving him an insight into the Russian way of thinking, the Russian mindset. And Tucker, coming from a very Western mindset, a very Western way of thinking that gets kind of straight to the point and doesn't think historically, didn't understand what he was up against. So when President Putin ran through the history of the Russian state from basically 862 AD, when Prince Rurik the Great of the Varangians, I think it was the Swedes, came down, may not have been the Swedes, but basically a Viking prince named Rurik came down to the shores of the Dnieper and married Princess Anna of the Rus, and formed what eventually became the Kievan Rus, Kievskaya Rus. And therefore, that was like essentially the founding of the modern Russian state at Rostov Veliki, Rostov the Great, not Rostov on Don, that's a different city. But Rostov Veliki founded the, sorry, not, no, I've got that wrong, at Novgorod, my bad, my mistake, at Novgorod itself, and founded that city. And he basically created the entire state of Russia. That was the beginning of what we consider to be modern Russia. And then Prince Vladimir the Great, the namesake of Vladimir Putin, came along, a little less than a century later, was baptized in the Orthodox faith and moved his entire nation away from, away from paganism. And by the way, Rurik didn't found Novgorod. He built a settlement near what is today Novgorod. So, my mistake. But he was, that whole dynasty created modern Russia. And that history lesson Tucker was giving that Tucker received from Putin was actually very important, because it demonstrates a continuity of thought and history that runs throughout the Russian mindset. This is very typical of Russians. I assure you, having spoken with them many times, having spent a very great deal of time with them, this is how they think. They're a very, very historically minded people. The only people that I've ever met who are more historically minded than the Russians are the Chinese. And the Russians are actually a much better people to deal with than the Chinese, because they are much higher trust. The Chinese are a very low trust people who nonetheless have a deep pride in their 5,000-year-old, history. So part of that history involves the preservation of the Orthodox faith. And when Constantinople fell in 1453, the Orthodox faith migrated north to Moscow, and the Moscow Patriarchate became the most powerful guardian, or the most powerful synod or branch of the Orthodox faith in the world, which it remains to this day. So Russia has, for the last 500-600 years, considered itself to be the guardian of the true faith. More than that, Russia has, for the last 600 years, been under siege in various ways from the West. And it's very important to understand this, to understand that every invasion of Russia ever, except for the Mongol invasion, came from the West. It came from places like Poland, the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth invading from Western Russia into the East. It came from Germany, with the First and Second World Wars. And inevitably, many of those invasions came through, well, guess what? What we call today Ukraine, which in old Slavic essentially meant, you know, the borderlands. And Putin was absolutely right about that. It's not just in Russian that Kray or Kraina means something along the lines of borderlands or, you know, border area. We've got a Czech guy in the Didactic Mind chat, and he says the same thing. It's basically in old Croatian, Kraj or Kraja or Kraina, something like that, means border or border area. So Putin wasn't making anything up. People think he was. He absolutely wasn't. Every single thing he said was factually verifiable. So when you have this third Rome, which exists in Moscow, which is the guardian of what, you know, much of the world considers to be the true faith, and you're constantly under attack from the West, you should not then be surprised to deliver that your culture develops into a very distinct kind of siege warfare mentality culture, that you're always under siege in some way. And that's exactly what's happened. When you add in the very devastating impact of communism on top of all of that, and the atheism, the irrationality, the stupidity of communism into the mix, you have a very peculiar and very distinct culture that is now in the process of rediscovering itself, that is now rebuilding itself, and has always very firmly believed itself to be a unique, distinct civilization state where the hand of the state is much stronger than it is in most other countries, and yet still believes in the Christian principles of individual liberty, of obedience to God, of the freedom to choose, that nonetheless should bring you closer to God through the sacrifice of Jesus Christ. That liberty to choose to accept God's hand is very much ingrained in Russian thinking and Russian spirituality. Now, there's still a strong element of paganism within Russia, as it happens. I won't go into that in much detail, but it's pretty interesting. But I assure you, having spent a lot of time in Russia, and I'm going back again in, you know, well, soon, I assure you, the Russians have a distinct Christian culture, except in the Muslim parts. And even then, actually, Christianity is reasonably well tolerated. You won't find that culture anywhere else. And they have built around this concept of themselves as a third Rome by taking the best of what they consider to be the intellectual, artistic, philosophical legacy of the West and wrapping it around what already existed. So they preserve what is best about the West and they add to it with their own distinct culture and identity. Why does this matter to the United States? Because the United States, being the other country in the world that considers itself to be the guardian of all that is Roman, has gone down the exact same path of corruption that destroyed the Western Roman Empire. It's the exact same thing. Those of you who pay attention to what President Putin says, as I do, may have been paying attention to his interview with Dmitry Kisilyov, with RIA Novosti, and I think it was Rossiya Sivodnya. They did a very interesting hour and a half, 2 hour interview, something like that, with the President Putin. And President Putin said things in that interview that I have never, ever heard him say before. Now, I'm saying this as someone who has read and listened to many of his speeches, not all of them, since 2007, actually, since the seminal Munich Security Conference address in 2007, where he basically took apart the entire unipolar world order and said, this cannot last and we will not obey it. That was his coming out speech in a lot of ways. He basically made that his speech in which he said to the world, Russia is back. We are independent. We will chart our own course, and we don't care what you think about it. And in the 15, almost 20 years since then, that is exactly what President Putin has done. For those of you who think President Putin is some sort of monomaniacal tyrant, I recommend you go back and read his speeches. I recommend you look at the English translation of at least the preamble or the foreword or the abstract or whatever it's called of his, quote unquote, his PhD thesis in economics. Because there's considerable controversy even in Russia as to whether or not he actually wrote that speech, that thesis. There is an argument that he paid a professor of economics at the university he was supposedly studying in to write the thesis for him. But actually, if you read it in English, you'll be stunned by how closely the things that are written in that thesis match President Putin's actions afterwards. What does it say in his thesis? It says Russia must follow a path of extracting its mineral wealth, which amounts to something like $75 trillion, if you count everything, oil, coal, gas, lumber, precious metals, minerals, etc., etc., under the surface and on the surface of Russia. $75 trillion in accessible, extractable resources. Must put that under state control and must otherwise have a market economy that obeys marketplace principles, but the resources must never, ever be allowed into the hands of international corporations. Must always be ultimately under Russian control. Guess what? That's exactly what President Putin has done ever since then. Which means he is a man whose words match his deeds. Word and deed in perfect alignment, almost. That is President Putin. And those people who study him, who understand him, know damned well this is who he is. Now, there used to be another president in the United States who was like that, the KGB compiled a dossier of this man back when he was governor of an American state. And he said, the dossier said, this is a man for whom word and deed are one and the same. That man was St. Reagan of the right, Ronaldus Magnus himself, the Gipper. It was Ronald Reagan. And Ronald Reagan was one of the last American presidents, I think, that genuinely respected what America was and is. Well, was, really. America as a country is gone. There's not even much point discussing it as in the present tense. I think this is something people need to understand, that all of the qualities Americans once held dear in their own leaders are the qualities that Russians have now in their leader, in President Putin. And he regards himself as the guardian of Russian culture and the Russian Third Rome, in the same way that American presidents like Reagan and, to a great extent, Trump, regarded and regard themselves as being guardians of an American culture and an American nation, an American national identity. Sadly, that no longer exists in the American Rome, but it does in the Russian Rome, if that makes any kind of sense. If you look at where America has gone, and you look at President Putin's criticisms of it and of the West in general, you'll be stunned by how harsh his rhetoric has become. When I read some of the comments that President Putin made in that interview, I was genuinely shocked, because I've never heard him use language like this. Never, ever, in more than, 5 years now, something like that, of studying his words. I've never heard him use language like this. The most telling statement of all was the bit that he said about how the West's vampire ball is coming to an end, where he talked about how for hundreds of years, the Western elites have dined on human flesh and blood, and have, basically, he said, they filled their bellies with human flesh and blood, but now their vampire ball is coming to an end. This is the most direct call out of Western globo-homo-pedo-pharisaitinist elites I've ever heard President Putin issue. I've never seen him this direct and this harsh. And what this means is he's done with the West, and Russia is done with the West. People need to keep this in mind. President Putin is the moderate in the Kremlin. I've been saying this for years. I'm not the only one. It's not my unique sort of insight into the Russian mindset. It absolutely is not. I simply pay attention to this stuff. I assure you, President Putin is the moderate in the Kremlin. All of the other people around him in his close circle, whether you take Defense Minister Shoigu or Foreign Minister Lavrov, who's probably going to retire very soon anyway, or especially head of the National Deputy Head of the National Security Council and former President Dmitry Medvedev, or Dmitry Patrushev is the, I think, the agriculture minister. Nikolai Patrushev, Sergei Naryshkin, all the way on down. Vyacheslav Volodin, the Speaker of the Duma. If you look at any of the top Russian officials, Mikhail Mishustin, Prime Minister, any of the top officials, all of them have basically said, we're done with the West, we've had enough. Medvedev is very much the bad cop in Russian society. He is the guy who says the things the Russian president can't say. But people need to pay attention to this. Whatever Medvedev says in his sort of bombastic, fiery way in his Telegram channel or on his Twitter X account, Putin turns around within 3 to 6 months later and he says the exact same thing. He just says it more softly. And when he says something like this, it's exactly what Medvedev was saying basically about 6 months ago. But now Putin is saying it. And this should scare the crap out of everybody in the West who's paying attention. And not enough people are. That's where people like me come in, where we're, you know, wildly flailing our hands and waving around, trying to desperately to wake people up and tell them, you don't know what's coming. You don't understand it. But the Russians do. And when Putin calls out the United States for its failings, he's doing so from a place where he understands exactly what's happening to the US, because he knows, as essentially the emperor over the vast Russian empire, which actually has no desire to expand. I mean, it's not an expansionistic country, not anymore, and hasn't been for 30 years. He understands all too well what will happen when the Western Rome falls, because he knows it. It's part of Russian culture. It's part of Russian history. He knows, he's seen the connection between the fall of the Western Roman Empire and the rise of the Eastern Roman Empire, which then transitioned its culture into Russia. He knows this. I'm not joking about that part either, by the way. Do you know what the word tsar comes from? Tsar, as in emperor or king. You know where that comes from? Caesar. Same as the German word Kaiser. Same place. It comes from the same name. It comes from Caesar, i.e. the title, originally the name of Gaius Julius Caesar, which eventually became known as the title for an emperor. It's the same word. It's just transliterated into Russian. Now do you understand how deep the links go, how far back the history goes? Once you understand this, you'll understand how Russians think and why they're looking at the Americans going, what the hell is wrong with you people? Now, I have a certain perspective on this, which most people don't, because I've lived in both Russia and the United States. I spent almost 12 years living in the United States. I've spent well over a year traveling and living in Russia. I spent 8 months living there during the coup times. So I can claim to have a good understanding of both countries and both ways of life. And what I can say, looking at America, is all of the same problems which brought down the Soviet Union and which brought down Rome, the Roman Empire, and the Roman Republic, I now see in the United States. I see the exact same problems as President Putin. I'm not as smart as he is, but I see the exact same issues. America is not ruled by the people anymore. It hasn't been for a very long time. When American elections can be so thoroughly corrupted that a doddering old senile man who can't even figure out where he is on any given day, who thinks his dead son died in Iraq instead of brain cancer, or who thinks his dead son is still alive, who, I mean, a special counsel found him mentally unfit to stand trial, and therefore didn't pursue charges against him. Well, if he's mentally unfit to stand trial, that means he's mentally unfit to be president, by definition, whose every utterance in public is just a complete disaster, and whose state of disunion speech was like, I can't even call it a train wreck. It was much worse than that. I mean, it was a catastrophe on an order I've never seen before. You know, the amount of heckling, the amount of rancor that he got from the crowd, I've never seen that before in a State of Union address. Maybe I haven't been paying attention. Yeah, okay, fair enough. But I've never seen any president treated like that by members of the opposition party. I mean, we're watching America descend into anarchy and chaos in a way that almost exactly mirrors the fall of empires in the past. If you look at the way what happened to the Soviet Union before it fell, it came apart because of the economic contradictions that undermined its model of growth. It couldn't grow because the communist system made it impossible to allocate resources in an efficient way. So they could never unlock the vast potential of their industry and their agriculture. I mean, the Soviet Union was almost never, self-sufficient in grain production. Especially in the last 20 years of its existence, the Soviet Union had to import vast amounts of grain from, guess what, the United States. And part of the reason why was because they were giving away huge amounts of grain to Africa, Asia, North Korea, to kind of, as bribes, effectively, to maintain their overseas empire. The Soviet Union was never as bad as the British Empire, let's say, but it was still pretty nasty. I mean, the separatist movements they funded in places like, well, Angola, Chad, where else? It was certainly against the Bush insurgencies in South Africa and Rhodesia, as it were. Robert Mugabe, I believe, was originally a communist backed, and I mean, I think he was originally a communist of some kind. And he was backed by the Communist Party, by the Comintern. And, you know, that is a big part of the reason why Zimbabwe is as messed up as it is today. But, you know, that's a whole nother story. The Soviet Union unraveled because of these economic contradictions that it could never resolve. And towards the end, it was ruled by a gerontocracy, by old men who were completely out of touch with daily life and daily realities for the Soviet citizen, and kept dying out one after another. Well, guess what? This is exactly what the United States has today. I mean, think about it. The neoliberal globalist world model is exactly what you see in the United States, and it doesn't work because it's based on a doctrine and a dogma of free trade that is in and of itself unworkable. It's every bit as unrealistic and unworkable as communism was. The only difference is communism disguised itself as this ideological utopian philosophy of, you know, from each according to his abilities to each according to his need. Well, okay, it was a utopian model that appealed rhetorically to shall we say, the better angels of our nature, if you want to put it that way. The doctrine of free trade is in some ways even more insidious than that, because it appeals to the logical side of our brains by pulling sleight of hand. What it does is, the Ricardian sort of concept of justifying free trade through comparative advantage, and I know this because, you know, economics training and so on and so forth, but it's not very difficult to prove this. All you have to do is read the original Ricardian thesis on the corn laws back in the day. What David Ricardo did was he froze the entire economy in mathematical terms. He froze everything and only allowed two variables to move. Well, when you have two variables moving and you can therefore just simulate how those two variables move in isolation, you can come up with all sorts of brilliant and wonderful ideas. That's why, you know, in high school level physics, you dumb everything down as much as possible. So you assume like zero friction and zero loss of energy transferred between impacts and complete freedom of movement of kinetic energy and 100% efficient translation of energy from one form into another, blah, 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 etc. Right? The reality is the real world doesn't work that way. So when you take off those binders and you start allowing more variables to interact together, then you run into this huge problem, and it happens very quickly. The equivalent in physics is the three-body problem in Newtonian mechanics. If you haven't read the book, by the way, Qixin Liu, the three-body problem, I'm reading it now as one of the many, far too many books that I'm reading. But it is very, very good. The English translation is superb. I mean, I don't speak Chinese, of course, but I can say just by reading the English translation, it is a genuinely very, very good translation. And so when you unfreeze these movements in an economy, you'll find that these simplistic assumptions don't work. They don't make sense. Well, the entire US economy is based on extremely simplistic assumptions that don't hold in the real world, such as the notion that globalization is good for everybody. It's not. It's just not. It's a great way to destroy your industrial base as it happens. We have 30 years of evidence to prove this. The idea, you know, behind modern monetary theory that you can have endless deficits and endless money printing and it doesn't matter. The assumption that you can do this rests itself on the fundamental belief that the dollar's reserve status, the dollar's reserve currency status will never erode. If you actually unpack all of it, that's the fundamental bedrock principle on which modern monetary theory operates. You remove that, and suddenly you've got this situation where modern monetary theory runs completely aground. And that's the problem. Western elites have never questioned the fundamental assumptions they're operating under. They've always assumed that Russia is essentially still the Soviet Union. I didn't visit the Soviet Union. I was too young. It collapsed during my lifetime, but I was very young when it happened, so I have no memory of what the Soviet Union was like. I have visited Russia many times, numerous times, more, I think, than any other single country on Earth except the US. And I can say with absolutely no hesitation, Russia as a country is essentially a dynamic free market economy. In most respects, not all, but in most respects. Economically speaking, in terms of everyday transactions, it's indistinguishable from the United Kingdom or the United States. Indeed, in many respects, it's actually more advanced as a payments market today than the United Kingdom is. It's very easy for you to go and pay for things with your phone using NFC technology. You don't even have to use a card. You can just transfer things on an app from one card to another, or between phone numbers. I mean, if your phone number is linked to your bank card, you can transfer things immediately. You can't do that in the UK, I mean, at least not to that extent. If you take the Moscow Metro, you can pay for things using your phone, you can pay for them using your debit card, you can pay for things using a Troika, you know, a ticket from the machine. Or you can get like a little ring on your finger that you tap against the payment turnstile as you walk straight through. You know where else you can do that? The London Metro, yes. Many European metros, yes. The New York subway system, nope. Can't do that. Can't do it. Even to this day, it's still a relatively new technology. They still haven't figured out how to modernize the New York metro system. So when you look at how far Russia has come and you look at where the United States is today, you have to think to yourself, this is a country headed for collapse. The United States is. And when you have the ability to analyze historical trends, as many who are, you know, who have stepped outside the Western bubble can do, like me, like some of the others to whom I pay attention, you'll understand very quickly, the United States is not an exceptional nation. It's not. It is subject to the same laws of history as everyone else. And when you look at the factors that led to the fall of Rome and to the implosion of Western Europe and the migration of Roman ideas and Roman culture, Roman law, east and then eventually north into Russia, you'll find the same factors at work in the United States. You'll find unrestricted immigration. You'll find attempts to convert these unrestricted illegal invaders into citizens through military service. It's happening right now. You'll find the same moral degeneracy that overtook Rome, the same perverted beliefs among the elites that they can do anything and say anything and get away with it, the same loss of hope and faith in the general population, the same movement away from the God of Christianity, the one true God, the God who heals and the God who saves and the God who lays down the law and the God who gives us mercy and freedom, to false gods that promise you wonderful things but deliver slavery and chains. You'll find the same nihilism, the same collapse of virility and hope. You'll find the same loss of baby making that you saw in ancient Rome, the same rise in abortion and infanticide that you saw in Rome, the same tolerance of crime and vagrancy and homelessness that you saw in Rome, the same collapse in living standards that wasn't really obvious on the surface, but it, you know, you could see it when you looked around, and the same sort of ever-growing gulf between the rich elites who ruled over everyone else and the great unwashed masses who had no hope of really ever bettering their lives. It's the same set of trends, the same history at work. And the only people anywhere on earth who know what's coming, as I said in my post yesterday from March 15th, the only people who understand this are the Russians. They're the ones who've lived through, in living memory, the collapse of an empire for the exact same reason, well, many of the same reasons, as what America is facing today. They know what's coming. They have great sympathy for what America is going through. And they're horrified by what they see. At the same time, they want nothing to do with America. They want nothing to do with the corruption of Western culture. They want to live free in their own country by their own laws. And they have every right to do that. But Americans are just sleepwalking into disaster. And I don't know how else to put it. I don't know how else to tell people that I know, that I've met, that I'm friends with, that the coming collapse of the United States could have been avoided. But now it's too late. I mean, it gives me no pleasure to say any of this. You know, America is still a country, or it was a country, that I admired immensely. I mean, I loved living in America. I will always be grateful to Americans, to particularly white Americans, who treated me with great respect, treated me with utmost courtesy, who let me come and live in their country, and as long as I obeyed their laws and paid their taxes, they left me alone. And I am very, very grateful for that fact. I feel really blessed that God gave me the chance, the opportunity to go there and to see what America is like. He took it away from me, and he took away everything I had there, but he had good reasons for doing it, as it happens. Because, you know, I needed to make some changes in my life, and God sort of, the way God operates, he sits around and he waits for you to make those decisions on your own, because he's extraordinarily patient and he's incredibly forgiving. I mean, much more so than humans can understand. But at a certain point, he's going to say, that's it. It's time for me to stop fishing and start throwing some dynamite in the water. And that's when things get painful. Very, very painful. But having gone through that, I can say that, you know, I'm really lucky that I left the United States when I did, because I wouldn't have to see all of the craziness, the insanity that it went through, particularly during the coup, during the St. George of fentanyl riots of 2020. I'm really fortunate I didn't have to go through that. And I really consider myself very blessed that I spent most of that time in Russia, actually, where it was safe, it was clean, everything reopened up within basically a month and a half. The summer was absolutely glorious. It was an incredible time. And then I left, and I went somewhere else, and then I went somewhere else after that, and I suffered through some lockdowns and quarantines, but for the most part, by basically mid-2021, I was completely free again. Whereas in the United States, that wasn't the case. I mean, the coup didn't end until February 24th, 2022, basically. Vladimir Putin single-handedly ended COVID. Most people don't remember that, but that's a fact. But when I look at what the United States has become, I look at it with real sadness, because there are so many good people in the U.S. and y'all are just sleepwalking into catastrophe. You don't understand what's coming. You don't realize that the loss of your empire awaits. And when that happens, not if, but when it happens, all of that money and all of that grift and all of that corruption and all of those failures will come back to roost. All of the immigrants who've come over and settled in the United States but have never become, quote-unquote, American, are suddenly, it's not suddenly, they are now discovering or rediscovering their national identities. And those identities have nothing to do with the principles of ancient Rome. They have nothing to do with the laws of free-born Englishmen, the rights of free men born under what was at the time the lawful rule of King George III, who got fed up of his tyranny, which was minor. I mean, it was a mere nothing compared to the tyranny imposed by Washington today, and who rebelled against it. These people don't want anything to do with the Constitution. They don't regard the Constitution as anything like a serious document. They don't regard the principles of fair play and of a high trust society as being worthy of attention. They don't think that way. They think very differently. And they will assert their own desires to live as they see fit. And it's just such a tragedy, because when you look back at the history of America, there's so much greatness and so much goodness in it that you're going to lose it all. And you don't know how to get it back. I mean, this is where I actually disagree strongly with a lot of Russians. Russians will argue, and President Putin is among them, that the West got rich basically by exploiting and enslaving the Third World. This is nonsense. It's just not true. The West got rich by becoming an industrial superpower, the United Kingdom first and foremost, by industrializing far faster than anyone else did. And the West got rich because very high trust, high IQ people came together to build a high trust, high IQ society with limited immigration, almost no immigration in many cases, with no interest whatsoever in importing the immorality of the Third World, the paganism of the Third World into itself, with strong Christian values and a strong work ethic. And they crafted a society that worked, that actually understood the basic principles and the laws of nature. And that was the society that had a huge population boom and then sent that population forth into the rest of the world. Yes, to conquer. That's a fact. I mean, let's not sugarcoat anything here. The West did conquer and enslave and pillage and take away. But how's that any different from any other empire that's ever existed? I mean, if you look at what the Aztecs or the Mayans or the Incans did to their enemies, the West was downright benign by comparison. It was the Western powers. It was a papal bull, Sublimus Dei, from 1537, that insisted the Mexica had to be treated as human beings, that they were ensouled, that they had to be treated decently, and stop the conquistadors from slaughtering them out wholesale. Because when the conquistadors went there, and they discovered the literal piles of skulls and the human cannibalism and the absolutely abhorrent practices of the Aztecs, they wanted to kill them all because these were literal flesh-eating pagans who practiced human sacrifice, which, as far as Christians are concerned, is evil to the core. So, you know, when President Putin says some of these things, I just look at it like, dude, no. I mean, that's propaganda. That really is genuine propaganda. But then when you look at what the United States has become, it is just so sad, because so much of what the Russians criticize America for being is true. I mean, they're telling the truth about how bad and how rotten America has become. And it's what we see transpiring is the destruction of the one thing that made sense about America above anything else. I mean, you take whether you take the managerial genius of American society, or you take the innovation or the work ethic or the idealism that came from having free men living under the open sky, beholden primarily to God, building strong families, all of that. When you take that and you look at what made it tick, it really came down to one principle. The words are not mine. Some of you may recognize them. But ultimately, it comes down to not a choice between left or right. You and I are told increasingly we have to choose between a left or right. Well, I'd like to suggest there is no such thing as a left or right. There's only an up or down. Up to man's old age dream, the ultimate in individual freedom consistent with law and order, or down to the antipode of totalitarianism. And regardless of their sincerity, their humanitarian motives, those who would trade our freedom for security have embarked on this downward course. Again, some of you may recognize the words, not mine. They belong to, and again, St. Reagan of the right, Ronaldus Magnus, the Gipper. That was from his speech on October 27th, 1964, which has since been called A Time for Choosing. And it summarizes exactly what's wrong with the fall of, or what has led to the fall of Rome in the West. It's no longer about a choice between left or right. That dichotomy was really always false to begin with. Left or right, it's not a relevant, particularly useful metric anymore. If you look at what Russia's building today, it's really basically a moderately conservative social welfare type state. It's a very European social welfare state with very conservative core values. That's all it is. Russia has free education, free healthcare, very heavily subsidized public transport, very heavily subsidized tertiary education, very heavily subsidized childcare schemes and maternity capital and, you know, bonuses for large families, that sort of thing. In many ways, this is indistinguishable from a lot of the social programs that Bismarck incorporated into the German state during the latter years of his time as Reichskanzler of Imperial Germany. It's the same thing. It's essentially the same thing. And it comes down to a moderate Christian society doing what it considers to be best for its own people. That is nationalism, not ultra-nationalism, which is a completely different kettle of fish, but simple, honest to God nationalism. The opposite is globalism. And globalism is what has led to this vampire ball, which is now coming to an end, which the Neo-Tsar called out directly to its face. And that is why the West hates him, because he is willing to say to the West what they don't want to hear. And that, because they don't want to hear it, because they don't want to act upon it, that is why Rome is burning down today in the West, while in the East, they're rebuilding it. Ultimately, they will rebuild Rome in all of its glory in the East, in Russia, which will become the arc of Western civilization. All that was best about the West will go to Russia, and that's where they will preserve it. And hopefully someday, when this current generation of insane idiots, this lunatic class of globalists has died out or been destroyed, most likely the latter, by really, you know, the ravening hordes of barbarians, if you will. When that happens, and I'm not advocating for any of this, I'm not saying this is a good thing, but when that happens, that's when we might see some changes. Well, I've rambled on for quite long enough. We're coming up on the hour mark, but I want to thank you for bearing with me for this long. Many thanks to my longtime listeners, many thanks to my longtime readers. Again, be sure to like, comment, share, and subscribe. Buy me a coffee if you feel like it, if you enjoyed what you heard. I will be back for the Easter podcast on the... when is it, actually? Can't remember. getting old. Oh, yeah, 31st, on the 31st itself. And until then, stay well, stay safe, and be careful out there because it is getting crazy. And this has been Didactic Mind, episode 117, The Burning of Rome. And this is Didact, over and out.